Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
I want to introduce my family, and this is a picture. Anyone that I'm blocking your view, feel free to move your chairs, or if you decide that this is not the class you're looking for, feel free to move or do whatever you need to do. This is my family. We were sightseeing in this picture about the time that my youngest, who's sitting on my husband's lap, is like this big, right after he was born. And this is a better depiction of my life at that time than the first picture. That shows you a little bit what that was like. And then this is a picture of us now. This is our current picture. I have two sons that just came home from their missions in February, and this was the morning after they came home. And this is a better depiction of our life. Well, these are all better depictions of our life now. And as you can see, we're still having a hard time keeping them all in one place. I certainly didn't pick this topic, managing conflict, but I like it. And I wondered a little bit why they chose this particular topic for me. And maybe they thought I should probably have a PhD by now in that arena, but I don't. After 9 months of working on this talk, I wonder even a little bit more why they chose me, because it seems like every time I sat down to work on it, I had to referee at least one conflict, sometimes multiple. And I think that the Lord wanted to bless me with a really great, healthy dose of humility and keep me grounded throughout the process of doing this. My handout's on page 97 if you have your guidebooks. And I'd really like for you to open up to that, not necessarily for the handout, but I'm going to ask you to, and hopefully you all have a pen, to write down a question. Put down a question that you would love to have answered during this presentation. A specific question. It could be super simple. It doesn't have to be like mind-boggling. For some reason you came to this class. Write down a question that you have. And you're not going to have to share these questions if you don't want to. This is something personal. And if you're on the audio, these presentations are recorded. If you're on the audio, I suggest that you pause and do the same thing. Write down a question that you want to have answered while you listen to this audio. I believe each of us is here today, including myself, to receive instruction from the Lord on this topic, to address our individual needs. And the thought that I had running through my mind over, the Spirit ministers to us individually, and He will answer our questions individually if we listen to His voice more than you listen to my voice and what I'm going to say. And I hope that the notes that you take are what He prompts you during this presentation, not necessarily what I say. And so the thought I had running over and over in my mind was the topic that they assigned me, the choice of managing conflict versus overcoming conflict, the peaceful home, something different. I love that they chose managing because it implies right from the get-go that it's not something that's going away. So if you came here hoping to end or, to have world peace after this class, that's probably not going to happen. There are so many meanings connected to conflict, and I made this slide so that we could kind of prime our minds to all the connected concepts that can come, when you think of conflict. Just some of the words like disagree, clash, incompatible, incongruity, vary, be at odds, friction. I don't know if anyone ever has any friction at their house. Animosity, difference, dispute, struggle, war. Some of these have more deeply negative connotations than others that seem basically, you know, not too harmless. But when we look at these words and we think about the nature of this life and that conflict is a part of Heavenly Father's plan, what is the purpose? Where is the opportunity for us there? And so I made another list of potential positive outcomes that we can gain from having conflict and opposition present in our lives. And some of these words bring, you know, some more positive light. Sacrifice, new viewpoints, agreements, creativity, introspection, forgiveness, yield, unity, consideration, or reconsideration. And I love this scripture in 1 Peter chapter 4 that says, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice, inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy." So if you ponder on that second part of the verse, we can realize that conflict is a great teacher. And then what is it teaching us? What is it revealing to us about others, about ourselves? If we will let it reveal to us the true nature and attributes and glory of Christ, it will provide us opportunities to experience his power firsthand. I don't think there's really any way we could understand or comprehend those attributes without the opportunity to use them for overcoming like things like he did. So this year I've pondered on these things to come up with some ideas that I could share with you. And some of these things we have done, and some things are things that I would like to do or I've thought about doing or I want to do in the future. And these ideas are not meant to be a prescription for what you need to do, but a gathering of ideas and a starting point that I hope might get you started on generating your own ideas. When the brother of Jared came to the Lord with his challenges building the barges, the Lord helped him to solve several, you know, he asked him some questions and he said, "Do this, do this, do this." And then, you know, in the end, some of the very basic, you know, he asked about the light, a very, very basic question. What are we going to do about the light? Like, this is really important. This is going to be an issue every day. And he said, "What do you want me to do?" And so the Lord asked him to bring his own solution and that they would start from there together. So I take that to mean that we have to gather our own little stones so that we can start from somewhere addressing our own challenges. And that gives me comfort with my, you know, little ideas that I have. You know, we have to start somewhere. So I certainly don't think we can do all the things that we're going to talk about. I'm going to try to talk about some of the things on the handout. I don't think that we can do them all at one time. I don't even know that we can do them all ever. But we might pick a focus or even a habit to work on, to bring to the Lord and ask for his guidance. What might work in one situation would not work in another. And what's good in one season for your family may change as your family grows and changes. And this is key. The Spirit is the only way to discern how to proceed in addressing conflict. And sometimes that Spirit directs you to do things that won't make sense. I'm going to share a little experience that I had. The first couple of years I was homeschooling, I was having a lot of conflict. My degree is in elementary education, and, you know, I brought that experience, you know, what I'd learned there in with me to homeschool. And it was mostly a big power struggle. My kids had come home from public school, and they were well-behaved there, and they did the things that the teachers asked them to do for the most part. They're good kids. But they weren't wanting to do the same thing for me. I had all these great ideas and learning experiences and lesson plans and all this great stuff, and they just didn't want to sit and listen to me. They wanted to giggle and wrestle. They wanted to be funny. More than anything, they wanted to be funny to everyone else. Not me, but everybody else. And to get everyone to laugh, and they wanted to ignore me, and they wanted to whine, and they wanted to say, why do we have to do this? And my teacher said, we're not supposed to do it like that. And they basically just made me want to have to pull teeth to get anything done, anything. And this was creating daily stress for me. And often the stress would be so bad, I would quit teaching and give up for the day, thinking that if I could just plan these amazing activities, they would be so enthralled that this wouldn't happen anymore. Well, that was false logic. The stress just kept climbing. Everyone was involved in this, but I have one son who is particularly skilled in the art of stress enhancement. And I think this game of getting mom to give up her plans for the day was like the ultimate game for him. One particularly challenging week, as I was at my breaking point, I was determined that they were not going to break me. I was going to push through, and every time I felt like I was going to lose my patience, I would go to my room for a little break and I would pray. Heavenly Father, I can't do this. And the thought would come into my mind, put them back in school. I would quickly brush that thought aside, like, oh my gosh, okay, just get it together. Dry my tears and put my happy face on, and I would go back out. With a short time, I found myself back in my room on my knees. This is the same day, mind you, same morning. Back in my room on my knees, and this happened several times. Each time I would have exactly the same thought in my mind, put them back in school. And I would brush it aside, and because I knew that obviously wasn't the answer. Finally, I really broke. I mean, it was a little scary. The kids were out of control. I was getting really angry, and I was back on my knees. Heavenly Father, I have all these little kids at home. I didn't decide to homeschool so that things would be crazy. I just wanted the opposite of this. I need to know what to do because nothing is working. And the clear and calm thought came to me, put them back in school. And that time, because I was broken, I said, okay. And it felt kind of like, I don't know, resignation. I just felt like, okay, I give. I came back out. I told everyone that was school age to get a backpack packed. And right then and there, I took and enrolled them that day in school, and they didn't come home with me. They stayed. I didn't even discuss this with my husband. And anyone that knows me knows that that is highly irregular. The whole thing seemed so crazy. And I drove home, and even though I randomly, throughout the following week, sat in my closet and cried, I felt this peace. And I wasn't crying because, like, what have I done? I was crying because I did not like that answer. I just cried and cried and cried. And my husband was kind of, well, you know, I eventually did tell my husband when the kids came home from school, and I said, don't tell your dad anything until I have a chance to talk to him, because they were already home. But he knew, and he trusted that I, luckily trusted whatever I needed to do. And so, It was a really hard time. This conflicted experience unfolded into a journey. The Lord directed me as I prayerfully pondered all these things. I came to be in a place where I could receive new answers and direction. I learned new things, and obviously we began homeschooling again, and I had to start all over. I had had a change, though, and I'd had a paradigm shift and many life-altering epiphanies along the way. And this conflict and its result brought a change in our entire family and brought me so much joy in the end. But at the time, I just had to trust the Spirit to do the opposite of what I felt could possibly be right. Okay, so I'm going to talk on your handout. There's like a whole list of some different skills, principles, and habits that in our homes we can teach. And there are so many things that go along with the skills we need to avoid conflict or to help conflict or to overcome conflict. I asked my kids, okay guys, I'm making this list, what are some of the most important skills we need to manage conflict? And my daughter Emma just said without hesitation, being a peacemaker. I was like, oh yeah, I can't believe I didn't think of that one. But then she added, but a peacemaker is not just that person that stops a fight, is a person that ultimately helps us see things differently and remember what matters most. They have a positive attitude and they inspire us to rise above selfishness. I was pretty taken back by that response. It was much better than what I've been coming up with, and it was such a concise description of the goal. But being a peacemaker involves a pretty extensive skill set. I mean, we can't just be a peacemaker. So we have to break it down into these little bitty things that we do every day. And so I'm going to start with the little bitty, teeny tiniest little thing that we do in our family that seems so small, but we do it for our kids all the time. I was having trouble whenever I talk with the kids and they would talk back to me with that voice that I'm like, don't you talk to your mother like that, you know. They would talk to me with this voice, and so I couldn't punish them every single time they talked. So you're like trying to figure out what to do, and I thought, okay, I can't give them a punishment for every single time they do this, but I can't accept this. I can't accept them talking to me this way. So we started this thing called Try Again. And when they would talk to us in a way that we didn't feel like was appropriate, or their, you know, the facial expression or something was not right, I'd say, try again. And then they do it again. And for some reason in my house, usually it takes at least 3 times. They try again, and I'm like, okay, I usually only give 3 chances. I'll say, if the first time they can't really fix it all the way, I'll just be like, one more time. Now, what they know is they can either try again or they can have the consequence for speaking disrespectfully. Trying again is so much easier than the consequence, so usually they at least try, unless they are so mad or so upset that they're like, I don't care about no stinking consequence. And in that case, which is very rare at this point, you know, it is what it is, so you're gonna have the consequence. But, so, I filmed, these are very short videos, so I hope you catch what is actually in here, because this really is a very small thing that we do. But I tried to video this in action at my house. So, and my kids were surprisingly convincing. They look, my other kids saw these videos and they're like, how did you catch them doing that? I'm like, they were actually acting. Okay, so the first one's my son. I'm calling him, and you're barely going to be able to see him here. John!
What?
Try again.
What?
Last chance.
Yes?
I need you to take out the trash, buddy. Okay. Here's the next one. There we go. So you get the idea. It's something teeny tiny, but believe it or not, we have to do it all the time. Does this create an instant change of heart to match the communication that they're giving? Not necessarily. But it does create an awareness that someone is always the recipient of how they communicate, and it reminds them that it always matters, and it gives them practice. President John Taylor shared this experience. Some years ago in Nauvoo, a gentleman in my hearing, a member of the legislature, asked Joseph Smith how it was he was enabled to govern so many people and to preserve such perfect order. Mr. Smith remarked that it was very easy to do. How, responded the gentleman, to us it is very difficult. Mr. Smith replied, I teach them correct principles and they govern themselves. What does this principle have to do with conflict? Over the years, I have found that micromanaging leads to power struggles. I'm not suggesting the opposite, where we completely let go of the wheel or the sails of the ship and, you know, the kids just, I'm not suggesting that. But what I do know is that force and compulsion drive away initiative and a climate of growth. This is a little excerpt from my journal several years ago. In attempt to teach and train my children, I am often too controlling. We can be in control of things without controlling another's agency. Leading without controlling feels like a very delicate dance. It is so easy to cross the line. It's something I'm working on. Albert Einstein said, "Peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved by understanding." This concept of governing yourself applies to children as well. At our house, we really struggle with kids wanting to boss each other. And we try to teach them to first learn to govern themselves and seek to understand others. Instead of saying, "Mind your own business," at our house, we say, "Govern yourself." We say that a lot. Okay, and then another skill that I think is so important to incorporate into family life. I mean, there's so many of these, but the last one of the last ones I'm going to talk about in this area is respecting different perspectives. Sometimes people look at a situation and say, if someone is doing, thinking, or deciding differently than I am, one of us is wrong. And usually that's followed by, and that person's not me. And this is really a subtle trap of the adversary that I think kind of infiltrates our thinking, and it's so easy to, I mean, even as adults, it's very easy to do this. And, you know, we can often judge erroneously if we get stuck on labeling wrong and right versus different. I mean, there's definitely times when we need to say, you know, this is wrong. This is definitely wrong. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the times when kids misjudge, well, that family in the church, they're doing this, and our family's doing this, so one of us has got to be wrong. You know, that we need to help them with that. And it shows up in every, that was just an example, but it shows up in so many, it shows up with siblings. I'm choosing to do this, they're choosing to do this. You know, he's wrong. So my husband and I have very different personalities, and this is a great opportunity for us to show them how we honor our differences. We have so many things not in common that it's, and I celebrate these things about my husband that are different. I love them. That's why I married him, was his differences. And for some reason, he likes the things about me that are different. And we try to really show that to our kids. And when we're working with our kids, when we're validating a point of view for one family member, it's so important to just go ahead and assume that we need to reassure the other family member, this doesn't make you wrong. You guys just see things very differently. And the more we kind of point that out, it helps get them ingrained, and they can cope better later in life whenever they start going, oh, the whole big world is way different than, you know, my family. My companion on my mission is way different than me. All these people I'm teaching, they're way different. They're not all wrong. The world is not all wrong in my little tiny experience, right? I think that's really important in helping to head off conflict. The last thing I want to say is that I think that our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, does an amazing job at putting out information to help us to learn about all these skills to become more Christ-like, all the little nitty-gritty skills. Now, all I have here on this, on the left side here, is just last month there was a whole article from a counselor in the church, a church family service counselor, social services counselor, I don't know if I said that right, on forgiving others. And these kind of articles appear all the time. And they're so concise. This one was kind of addressed to the young adults. And the first, it gave 5 misconceptions, and it gave 5 tips for forgiving others. I thought these misconceptions were amazing. I need to teach these to my kids over and over and over again. The first one is, I still remember what happened, so that means I haven't forgiven. That's a misconception. If I forgive, I give up the protection I have against those who hurt me. That's a misconception. And they explain, they help them to understand. If I forgive, then I have to admit that what happened was acceptable in some way. That's a misconception. But how many kids feel that way? It's really hard to forgive when you feel like you feel this way. If I forgive, then I must bring the perpetrator of the hurt back into my life with open arms. I think that's a mistake that I make sometimes as a parent. Sometimes we do need to, give your brother a hug, and it's okay to help them to feel forgiveness. But if they're still really hurt, and we're constantly teaching them, forgiveness means that you feel happy feelings to that person right away. Maybe not so much. And the last one said, I cannot forgive. They have not repented or changed their behavior. And that's another, we know, misconception. We don't have to wait for the other person to change to forgive. So to me, I think these articles that are on the church websites and in the Ensigns are such a good resource for family home meetings or discussions or even working through problems that we have. Okay, so I'm going to move on to a different aspect of what we need to, what I think we need a lot of to teach kids about, and family members, how we can learn about managing conflict. I think we need to see how it's done. I think we need models. I think we need, first and foremost, in the home, there's often a mom and a dad. Sometimes there's a single parent. But if there is even a single parent, how those parents interact, which is probably a lot more difficult than those that are parents that are together, that's an ideal situation to show a good example of how to, have a good rapport and show respect to someone. And in our marriages, I think is the first really big place that we can show our kids what this looks like. If we can't show them what getting along looks like in our number one, how in the world are they going to get along with their siblings and the whole entire world? Now, that's a lot of pressure because we're so close as a companionship that it's right up front, right in their face, and we're not perfect, and we have things that we work on, but that's where we can really have a major impact on showing them what peaceful relationships look like. So these are some quotes by the Hinckleys, who I, really love. The one here on the right, President Hinckley said, "Mutual respect makes all the difference in the world. Having respect for one another as individuals and not trying to change your partner after your manner." I love that. President Hinckley said, "You let her live her life in her way and encourage her talents and her interests." And I think you could say the same for wives. Let your partner live after their manner. Let him live his life in his way and encourage his talents and his interests. I think that would go a really long way in the home. And then Sister Hinckley, I love that she said this. She said this to her husband, about her husband. "You've always given me wings to fly, and I loved you for it." And I think we can do that for our spouses, and we can do that for our kids when we honor who they are and stop trying to make them what we think they should be and really give them that respect that will help them to feel comfortable to bloom and be who they are. The next idea I had for modeling is family read-alouds. Some of you guys are already so great at this, and you could probably share lots of experiences. I'm just going to share a couple of experiences. This first book on here, Little Britches, we read this aloud in our family, and this is what I want to say about family read-alouds. This is family therapy. It is family therapy. It's so therapeutic to live out a little tiny microcosm world and life where it's not right here and it's non-threatening. We can talk about it and take the heat off of the real situation. And in Little Britches, the main character is the embodiment of my stress-enhancing son. Or I used to call him that. He's not anymore as stress. Well, he's pretty stress-enhancing. He's high energy. He is amazing. And he always was. He was our Captain Moroni. Because, sorry, that story I told you earlier about sending him back to school and starting all over, is that son taught me, oh no, you're not going to take away my freedom. I'm going to be who I'm going to be, and nothing is going to stop me. And I had to find it in myself to learn how to be that kind of mom that could set my children free and bring out their best. And Moroni was a very different kid than Nephi. You know, Nephi was probably like the perfect, I will go, I will do the things that my dad commands. And Moroni was probably like, I'm going over the wall, Dad. We're going in. You know, if they were both in the same family, they would need that lesson from mom saying, he just thinks very differently than you, son. You're very different. It's okay. You're righteous. You're righteous. It's all good. So Little Britches was a great therapy for our family because this story shows this amazing boy that leads his family, that works so hard, that he's the oldest son, and he's just energetic. And everyone in my family learned to love this main character, but they couldn't stop saying, that is this person. That is this person. And that son was like, yep, that's me. That's totally me. And that son, when we were reading it, could see his qualities in a good light. And the other siblings were like, that's really cool that you're like that. You're so like that. And then me and my husband, I said, you got to read this book. I got this new book, and it's because he was at work while we were reading it aloud. And I said, we've got a parenting manual for the son because the parents in here handle it everything so well. And this is actually based on a true story. He writes these stories about his life. So that's what a read aloud can do. There are so many really good family read alouds. Laddie is one where you have all these different family members, and there's so many where you have siblings and they all have different characteristics, and the story really helps you as the readers to appreciate all the differences in who they are. In the middle, I have a story of Joseph of Egypt because I will never forget the time that we read the story from the Old Testament of Joseph forgiving his brothers. And it is such a beautiful account that every single one of us just wept. Every single one of us. And we just had to stop and take it all in. So obviously the scriptures, we need to point out who our models are in this, in these, obtaining these attributes. So then lastly on models, I have that we need to look to real life. Even outside the home, these pictures are here inside the home. We need to point out to our children when they are modeling these characteristics. Our kids naturally do these things. Sometimes it's the youngest. Naturally do these things that we want them to keep doing. And if we point it out and say, wow, I just can't believe how good you guys are getting along. It's really hard to get along in a complicated game like this. You guys are just amazing. It's really hard when you're busy to stop and think about those things, but it goes a lot further than saying, would you please stop fighting when you play this game? And then there's also examples that happen. I have another, I had a week where this just randomly happened to me. We were in the checkout line at a store, and I was buying things for one of my sons that has some special health concerns. And because he has some special dietary needs, all these foods were like super expensive. you know, organic and just really particular foods and little things that were really expensive. And we were going through the line, and I had, you know, these like three or four kids with me. And the lady at the checkout was definitely, you know, she was probably my mother's age. You could tell she did not have a lot. She probably had very, very little. And she was not my race. She was not, you know, she was probably very different from me. We were checking out, and I look in my purse, and somehow, I don't remember, I've forgotten my wallet, or I thought I had, you know, some money in my wallet. For some reason, I was just like, oh my goodness, I think I left my wallet at home. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And I was gathering up the things. I said, I'll be back. And she's like, no. It's okay. I got it. And I was like, oh no, because it was some expensive things. I was like, no, I can just run. We live right here. I was not going to let this lady do this. She was like, oh yes, you are. And she gets her little money out of her purse and she puts it in the register. And I said, I'll be right back. I'll bring you the money back. Like, I wasn't going to accept this. And she's like, no, please don't. It's okay. Go. Just go. Like, stop making a scene, lady. And so when I left, I told those boys, do you know how amazing it is that that lady didn't judge me? She didn't think in her head, wow, this lady has, obviously has way more money than I do buying all these expensive groceries. I wish I could buy food like that. She didn't think that. She didn't think she's different than me or, oh, must be nice. She just thought, I want to help this lady. And she paid for it. And it wasn't like 2 days later, 1 day later. I'm at a thrift store. I'm at this thrift store, and we're just having a palooza. We're like buying. We had this stack of stuff because it was my daughter's birthday, and she'd found these some fun things. And we were buying all this stuff at a thrift store. And we got to the checkout, and every other thrift store I go to takes a debit. I go to lots of thrift stores. And I pull out my debit card, and she said, oh, we only take cash. And I thought, oh, not again. I mean, come on, this just happened to me like 2 days ago. And another very similar character stepped over, was at a rack, stepped over and said, I'll pay for this. I'm like, no, we're just, this is like out of control here. No. And she's like, please, let me pay for this. And she paid for it. And we were out of town. And I couldn't hardly bear it. I thought, I cannot believe that that lady just bought all that stuff. And I thought, there's some reason this has happened to me. So all I knew to do was tell my kids, guys, it's so important that we have, I don't think I would have done that. And I hate that I wouldn't have done that because it just made me feel so good and like so loved and so humble. And the next time, this is out of town thrift store, this past week I was in that thrift store and there was a little guy that came in. He was in a big hurry and, you know, he's probably like in his 20 maybe. He took a pair of dress pants off the thing, went, tried on the dress pants. That stood out to me because boys like never want to try on anything. And he came back. We were leaving out the door, and the same thing happened to him. She's like, we don't take debit. He's like, oh, no. Okay, and he was just barely in earshot because I was pushing out the door, but because that had happened to me, I, like, hung back. And he's like, oh, and he had his change, and he was like, wait, I said, wait, let me, and, you know, I couldn't do anything like these ladies did. I mean, this pair of pants was like $1.75. I came over, and I said, let me pay for it, and he just looked at me so shocked. He goes, are you serious? And I was like, yes. Let me pay for it. Every time I come in here, I forget and needs cash. And he was in such a hurry. He was like, thank you. And he goes, I have 75 cents. Let me give you 75. And, you know, we just had that interchange. And we left. And one of my sons that had been with me previously was like, Mom, that was so cool. You got to do that. Because, you know, people, like, always do that for us. I was like, yeah, I guess. Anyway, so I think if we point out in when we see these amazing things in the world, it's not enough for them just to be around us. We have to really help it sink in. Okay, so the next area I have on here is counsel. And there's a lot of different types of counseling, and I think sometimes when we hear in the church, we need to do these counseling that our eyes kind of glaze over and be like, Yeah, we're going to get to that, but that is just so far down on the list. But it really needs to be a climate and a environment that we create in our homes. And I can tell you that my husband and I have always struggled with doing this, even though we have such a strong testimony that counseling together as a family really is powerful. It's so powerful that I think we do it, and the amazing things that happen last for like 3 years, because we don't do it again for like 3 years. And then whenever we're having a crisis and we do it again, we're like, this is so helpful. So a lot of these things, especially, so family counsel is something that, you know, we always, a lot of times we get to family home evening, or we kind of do combined family counsel, family home evening. But one thing about family counsel that's really great is if you're having a lot of problems during the day in your homeschool and you're like, I can't even address all the problems, let alone like learn anything, you can have a notebook and lay it on the table, and every time they have an issue, say, can you write that down on the agenda for family counsel? We'll take care of that in family counsel tonight. Or if, you know, if you're like my family, every day, you know, you need to have a family counsel. You know, if you do that, then they can feel super important about, I am on the agenda, something's going to get done, and not take up all this time, you know, mediating back and forth, what's going on. So President Nelson in this last conference said something, taught us something about counsel that is different than the world thinks about counseling together. And it is so amazing. And I think that we need to read that. When I read this, I want you to think about your family and think about this pattern, applying this to your family. When we convene as a council of the First Presidency in the Quorum of the Twelve, our meeting rooms become rooms of revelation. And we need to start our family councils with a prayer and have that mindset that revelation is getting ready to happen. The Spirit is palpably present. As we wrestle with complex matters, a thrilling process unfolds as each apostle, and we could say member of the family, freely expresses his thoughts and points of view. Though we may differ in our initial perspectives, which I'm sure in your family, if they're like mine, you will, the love we feel for each other is constant. And this is the key. Our unity helps us to discern the Lord's will for his church. And we can say, our unity will help us to discern the Lord's will for our family. Not, it's our unity. That is the key. And how do we do that? Because how do we get all on the same page? And this is what he said next. In our meetings, the majority never rules. I got to work on that. We listen prayerfully to one another and talk with each other until we are united. Then, when we have reached complete accord, the unifying influence of the Holy Ghost is spine-tingling. I love that. So, parent counsel, basically, for my husband and I, that is whenever, however. Usually it's like this. Honey, we got to go to our room and talk right now. Or, can we go for a drive? We got to talk about something. And he's the same. Leanne, we got to talk about this. And I have to fill him in on the situation, because sometimes it's really hard for whoever works. In our house, it's Dad. When he comes home, he's missed out on a big piece of the picture. And he's really put it at a disadvantage. He's like supposed to come in and tag team when he doesn't know all these things that have happened during the day and who's sensitive and like what really happened. And he's like starting to, you know, do his thing and have everyone, you know, do what they're supposed to be doing. And it puts him in a bad position. So, and sometimes we just need to explain. The Spirit is telling me that this child needs this. I don't know what's going on with them. Okay, it's on my radar. You know, that's a family, that's a parent council for us. Like that little thing I just said, that's a parent council. More formally, we're like, this problem needs serious help, and we kneel down, say a prayer, and then we talk about it. Interviews is something that our family always has a goal to do on Fast Sunday. We come home from church, and we do interviews. We are super sporadic, but we know that it works. It is so powerful. It is so powerful. It changes the way our children interact with us when we're not you know, later. It changes the way they interact with each other. When we have an interview, we're both there. We both sit, we say a prayer. My husband asks one of us to say the prayer, and we start talking to them. And usually goes like this. Usually my husband says, how's your scripture study going? Where are you at in your scriptures? And they have to come up with where they're at in the scriptures. And how's it going? How's your personal prayer going? That's usually pretty typical. I usually say, what are you looking forward to most right now in your life? Or I say, what is your biggest challenge, the biggest challenge you're facing right now? Or I say, who are you having the most difficulty with in our family right now? Something like that. And my husband, I answer a question, then that makes him think of a question, and we just kind of go back and forth. What is something that you want to share with us that you feel like you never have time to say to us? Because we're here right now, and we'll listen to what you say. The only problem with interviews is you get in it, and if you're like me, and you have a lot of kids, you start getting really tired, and the kids are just really getting wound up. They are loving it, and you're like, okay, we got to move on to the next kid, please, or we're never going to get this done. And so a lot of times we'll do like half, or sometimes whenever we'll hit a kid right off the bat, and they take an hour, and we're like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to process this. Okay, all the rest of the interviews are called off, and everyone's like, oh, we're like, okay, we're done for today. We gave all the juice we got. So they're really, really good and helpful. Open dialogue's kind of obvious. Listen, not when you want to hear something they're saying. Try to listen. As parents, it's really easy to get in the you know, they're telling you all the stuff. And some of your kids, they just talk all day. They never stop talking. But when you have that little feeling and the Spirit telling you, they're really trying to get your attention right now. Try to listen to those times if you can't listen all the time. If you're like me, I just like have my limitations. I can't listen to everything, even though I should. And then mediate. What I had to say about mediate is there's a lot of different types of mediation, and I put or not, because sometimes every time two kids are arguing or every time kids are doing something, we say something that we get in the middle of it and we're like trying to mediate every single time. Instead of waiting for it to boil down and then quietly taking, you know, that kid aside and saying, you know, giving him some skills and letting him go try again. Sometimes it's bad. In our house, you know, we have all these different personalities. Right now we have a really real situation with our youngest son. How he feels about, because of the dynamics of our family. He is the bot. I had 11 children that are 9 years apart. I have a bunch of twins. They're all squished together. Very, very different dynamics in another family. But he's at, you know, they were all in primary together. They're all teens and, you know, YSA together. They're all going to be in their 20s together. But everyone's doing, so. If to him it looks like everyone's doing everything one right after the other. But he's always the last. And when you have a group of kids, what's the dynamic that's going to happen if two people are going to pair off? Are you going to want to play with the older kid? Or are you going to want to play with the younger kid? And so our family, we love our youngest son, and he loves us. But because the dynamics of our family, it's challenging for him to feel like what he says matters to them. Because, you know, they're all boys, and they're not all boys, but the ones that he feels especially unable to keep up with, you know, what he says doesn't seem to matter. So we have this situation, and one time, this youngest son wrote to one of my sons on the mission and said, I'm trying so hard. He's, you know, when he wrote this, he's like 10. I'm trying so hard to be happy. I pray to be happy. Now, he didn't tell us any of this. He's like, but I feel so sad all the time. I feel like, you know, what I say doesn't matter. And he went on and on in the letter, making my son that was on his mission, he's like, oh my goodness. So he emailed me that very day. You know, you're not supposed to email on another day, but he emailed me and took a picture. All he did was send the picture of this letter. He's like, Mom, this needs to be addressed today because this child's never written me. And this is what he wrote. he's like, the child said, I prayed, but nothing's working. So it was time to do some mediation, because we certainly, all these things on the, we tried everything. You got to include your brother, take him with you, tell him what he says matters. And they're like, okay, So we had to do some mediation, and we've had to do a lot of it. But this one thing that we did right off the bat was when John wasn't there, we read his letter to the rest of the family. And they're like, what? No way. He doesn't feel like that. Not really. And we're like, watch him, care about him, pay attention to him. And they were doing really good for a little while, but then it just kind of went away because, they're not really taking it into their heart. And so one day we were really struggling and we're all sitting around and I go, hey guys, we weren't even in a council. I'm like, hey guys, be nice. Just think about the way that you're talking in this situation. When he makes a comment, it matters. And I hate to do that out loud because that's right in front of him. But then I said, because John looks up to every single one of you. Every single one of you. Now, all of them rolled their eyes because the way he feels really defensive, he always is like, he acts like he doesn't care about what they say because that's the way he feels they feel. So the way he acts, they're like, yeah, like he looks up to us. I said, he looks up to every single one of you. And I turned to John, and I'm hoping this is going to work because I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. I said, and John, don't you look up to every single one of them? And all of a sudden, he looked at me, and his gaze was like so sincere, and he's like, yes. In that moment, nothing could have communicated his feelings for them any differently. And as we mediate with our kids and try to get them to see where they don't have the experience to see yet, when we do that, we have to follow the Spirit, and we have to take chances and just hope that something's going to work. One other thing we did with this child, we have the one that's right above him. He really gives us a run for our money with that child because, he definitely doesn't want to be the last. He wants to make sure everyone knows that he's with this group up here, not with this little guy down here. And so we have some struggles with those two competing and stuff. And one time my husband gave him the consequence because they would not stop arguing, gave him the consequence of, you're going to have to be together for 24 hours. I don't know, maybe it was 48 hours. I can't remember. 48 hours, nonstop, all the time, every single second. And I was like, oh my goodness, can we have a family council? Quick, please. Wrong. No, you don't understand. I'm going to be here. That is not going to work. They cannot do this. But that's what he felt inspired to do. He's like, you are not going to leave each other's side. You are going to sleep. If it's in a tent, I don't care. You're going to sleep side by side. When he goes outside to take out the trash, you're going outside to take out the trash. When you go play, you're going to be everywhere together. And I told him, honey, we can't do this. And he's like, this is what we're doing. I'm like, okay, this is going to be crazy. It was rocky for the morning, the first morning. And then something just happened. All of a sudden, I look outside, they're playing together. They hadn't played well together in about 6 months. They're playing, and then they decide to go make a fort in the woods, and then they go decide to do this. And then I promise you, I think they were skipping, holding hands. Not really, but they looked, in my brain, they looked like they were coming into the house, beaming, so happy. And then they knew they had one more day to go, and they were so excited. And they had so much fun. I had so much fun. And I thought, why is this? Why is this? I don't understand. I can never do that again because it wouldn't work. But for whatever reason, at that time, it worked to help break up some of the tension with those two. So you have to counsel with the Lord the most. You have to follow the Spirit. The last thing that I'm going to say is just that we need to set the stage for peace. And all that means is, all of these things we can teach, but if we're not careful about having an environment that's orderly, it really makes, chaos really breeds contention. I'm not saying spick and span. I'm not saying perfectly clean. If you know anything about reality of someone like me, that's never going to happen. Perfect home, everything all clean, all the splatters wiped off on the wall. I mean, at one time, all those things are going to happen, but not all at one time. But a house of order means just order. The spirit is felt there. And physical needs met, if your kids are not getting enough sleep, especially your teens, in my house, I can't bear it. I can't bear it. They're whiny. They're complainy. If they don't eat well, same thing. They're eating a lot of sugar, hang it up. And then the last one, one of my sons told me, he's like, Mom, the most important thing that we do to get along is we do fun stuff together because that makes us like each other. And I said, you're right. We have to make and protect that family time. The last thing that I want to share in these couple of minutes is this very, very short video.
Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith?
In closing, I just want to say that do not fear. If we have the faith to remember what all this conflict is about and what is supposed to emerge from the storms, then the Lord can calm any and every storm. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I hope that your questions were answered. I like how I passed the buck there. Let the Lord take care of that. I hope that if your questions were not answered, that you have the inspiration that you need from the Spirit to prayerfully consider what the answers might be for your family. And have a great conference.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.